Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is no stranger to this podcast. His name is Jean-François Tremblay, and he is the owner and founder of CanLab, a lab in Montreal, Quebec, where they produce research-grade peptides. And in today's show, Jean-François and I decided that we were going to take a deep dive into BPC-157, which is a peptide that, for people who know about peptides, they've heard about for a long time. It's pretty well known. It's got incredibly wide-ranging benefits, but we just thought, you know, as a matter of fact, it has such a wide range of benefits that I think that we often forget how many different systems in the human body it can affect positively. And I should say also, of course, know that most of the research that's been done on and published on BPC-157 to date is mostly animal studies still. So I do want to remind you that none of the information in this podcast is intended as medical advice. Peptides are still, for the most part, qualified or categorized as research chemicals. So we are not telling anybody to use peptides or that they should. If you think that this is something you want to investigate, then please connect with your primary caregiver and talk to them about whether or not this might be something that you should explore. In the meantime, the podcast should provide you with a wealth of information so that you can ask the right questions and maybe even direct your provider in the right direction. So I'm not going to talk any further. So if you get value from this podcast, please make sure to leave us a review. Please make sure to share it with any of your friends or family, anyone that you think would also get value from it. If you have any comments or questions, please make sure to reach out to me. You can find me on Facebook or on MeWe in the Biohacking Superhuman Performance group, or you can reach me through my website, which is natnidham.com. And if you want to try and connect with Jean-François, I would say that the Facebook group that I just mentioned is a pretty good place because he's in there fairly often, or you can always try to reach him through canlabsciences.com. So thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you for your attention and for all the amazing comments we've gotten so far. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back, Jean-François Tremblay. Nice to see you again, sir.
Hey, yeah, hi again.
Hey, hi. Always a little bit awkward starting these, right? Because we talk for about half an hour before we start. So you guys that are listening, just so you know, we have a little chat before we start our podcast every time. But as you know from the intro, we're here again with Jean-François Tremblay from CanLab. And today we're talking about the top-selling peptide in his stable of peptides. And I call it sometimes, and no disrespect to the peptide, I call it the blue Model T Ford of the peptide world. Like BPC-157 is the one, it's the one fallback. It's the peptide that, not that everybody knows, but anybody who's ever read about peptides has heard about BPC-157. Do you agree, Jean-François?
Very much so. It's, yeah.
Yeah. And it's the first one I think I learned about. And it, to me, when I first heard about it, it was jaw-dropping, right? It's this, for starters, it's naturally occurring in our gastric juice. So it's already, it's present in your body, like so many of the other, all the other peptides we use. But it's one of the only peptides that you can actually use orally. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the podcast, because there are many, many questions people have about how stable it is when they take it orally, but it's a peptide you can use intranasally, you can use it subcutaneous injections, and you can use it orally as well, right?
Yeah, even topically.
Yeah, for burns, right?
Exactly. If it's kind of a open wound, a cut, a burn, for as long as it's open, that it doesn't have the skin layer to protect,
right,
it's working really, really good.
Really? I should have used it. I should have used it last week when I had that big reaction to the NAD patch, and I ended up with blisters all over, and then they popped, and it was really ugly.
Well, what you have done many times, and in case of blisters,
yeah,
you do it. Well, you do the sub Q. It's still a sub Q, but you inject inside the blister. But first you empty it, and then you kind of inject the BPC within the blister, so it's in direct contact with the damaged skin.
Yeah,
it doesn't hurt.
It was hurting.
And yeah, but not for long, because it heals so fast. And what I've seen, it leaves like no scars.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
You know, in cases like that, it works amazingly good.
Yeah. So, okay, good. So what we're going to talk a bit about tonight is, because I think it does so many different things. I want to talk about all of the different aspects of human healing that BPC-157 can assist with. And I mean, obviously we all know that no peptide can do all the work on its own, but I have to say that BPC-157, it's one of the ones that comes closest. That it's a peptide that in certain conditions you can use it and you can get results almost before people make major changes. Like I've seen it with things like acid reflux, like within a couple of weeks. I mean, as long as people aren't being stupid with their diet and alcohol and whatever, it is people who've been on PPIs forever. They can come off their PPIs sometimes in 2 weeks. Sometimes it takes a month. Like it depends on the amount of damage, but it is a remarkable peptide in terms of how effective it is with very little time and effort. What do you think, Jean-François?
I concur.
Okay. I have to be careful. No, I don't.
Basically this is it. I like to call it the moron-proof peptide, where you cannot go wrong with it. So even somebody who doesn't know about peptide at all, but you know he knows it's healing, give BPC-157 and thymazine beta-4 is moron-proof too, and you cannot go wrong.
Yeah.
And you know 95% of the case it's gonna do something positive.
Exactly.
So. Maybe I shouldn't say that because, you know, I'm going to maybe kill the business of a few doctors that have worked with that secret. But basically, because that happened many years ago when I, you know, you start to use some peptides clinically, you know, with clients, and they come up to you and they say, or the studies didn't come out, so you don't know. They say, hey, do you think that would be good for this or for that? So now you look in the literature and there is nothing. But you use it anyway, and first thing you know, it's working. You say, yeah, well. Yeah. So I found that to happen with those two peptides.
Yeah, but we're not talking about TB4 tonight. We're staying on topic.
But with BPC, I found that to happen with BPC. It works for everything.
Yeah. The other thing it works really well for that I'm always amazed at, and which is a really nice thing, is if you have someone who's using NSAIDs, so non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. Now, in a perfect world, you get off those. But even if people who can't, who for whatever reason, for a period of time have to use them, it can help to mitigate the damage on the gut that the NSAIDs will do. And apparently it'll do that for alcohol to a point as well. So it has a bit of a protective effect within reason.
But it's not, the effect you'll see is protection, but that's because alcohol and said that they do cause damages.
Exactly.
And it just repairs those damages as they happen if you use both at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what happened. And it's amazingly good, actually. Now, depending on dosage of both the NSAID and the BPC, you know, you may have different outcome. Mm-hmm. But the outcome will always be better if you're using BPC with the NSAID.
Exactly. The other thing that, so that's on the, and also for people with ulcers, it's helpful with the gastric ulcers as well. Yes?
Yeah. And sometime very fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, everything.
I know.
Name them all. I'm going to say yes to everything.
Yeah, so let's run through it. So it's definitely a big player in that stack that people like to call the Wolverine stack. So this is for musculoskeletal injuries. So for muscles, tendons, ligaments, bone, it you know, kind of rushes to the rescue kind of thing and will contribute significantly. And that's where you've got that triad with the BPC-157, the TB4. Very often people will use the growth hormone secretagogues with those just to give that little extra push of growth hormone. BPC actually acts also on the growth hormone receptors to help them be.
Yeah, that we found out recently. Yeah. And it's actually believed to be one of the mechanisms through which it heals.
Right.
By increasing the receptivity, so to say, of those receptors.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the main way it heals.
No.
But the people who did the research, of course, they were focused on that. So they, you know, they say, oh, this is it. You know, they're researchers. So they're very, in a way, very narrow-minded to what they're doing at the moment. But yeah, it's probably part of... you know, even if you don't take anything, extra growth hormone, just your own, you make it work more efficient.
Yeah, you become better at using it. So another property of BPC-157, and this is a really interesting one, and it's one that freaks people out quite often, and that's this property of angiogenesis, of increased vascularization to a wound or an area that needs healing. So basically it's in order to increase blood flow. Increased blood flow means you get more nutrients to the area, means you get waste removal. But at the same time, you get people getting pretty freaked out about that, because what if you have cancer? What if there's an active tumor? Would that not, in theory, bring more blood flow to the cancer? So I don't know how close to this you want to get, Jean-François, in my practice.
Because I've been talking about that previously, not with you, with I don't know who, in private with some doctors that they were scared to use it.
Sure.
And it comes back to, you need to go back to the basic of what peptides are and what they do. Mm-hmm. Peptides, and that I discussed with you on the podcast, they are not drugs,
yes,
or medications. They don't force their actions, meaning that yes, they have the potential to do angiogenesis if that's what the body needs. It won't force it on the body. Okay, example, GW501516, which is a drug, provoke angiogenesis. Even if you don't need it, it's a drug. It pushes it. That's why you take GW, you sit all day long watching Netflix on your couch, and you will have an increase in vascularity in the muscles, and your VO2 max will increase a few points because of that, because vascularity of the muscle is one component of the VO2. So, but it's a drug. It pushes, you know, it pushes it just to, so people who didn't listen to the other podcast. What I mean by forcing is, the best example is any drug for blood pressure. So if I have blood pressure and I take the drug, it's going to bring down my blood pressure to normal, right? But if you don't have high blood pressure, and you take the same, it's still going to bring it down. Yeah. You know, it doesn't choose. It doesn't look if you need to bring it down or not. Yeah. It just brings it down. Peptides, they choose.
They're selective.
Because athletes, they found very fast that GW was really good for endurance,
I'm guessing it's on the banned substances list, by the way.
Oh, big time.
Big time.
But like if BPC-157 was forcing that angiogenesis activity, that mm-hmm. you take it and it provokes it, then a long time ago, every athlete on the surface of this planet would be using it for that purpose.
Right.
Well, right. Now, probably they try. They say, hey, it provokes angiogenesis. Let's try. And no, it doesn't happen.
Okay.
Now you look at studies. They say, okay, yeah, but in the studies we see it's happening. Yes. Where is it happening? It's happening where it's needed. In vitro, you know, in those little petri dish, they throw yeah. in just a piece of meat, a tissue, anything. Give it barely what it needs to survive mm-hmm. and long enough so they can study what's happening, right?
Yeah.
So you take one of those little piece of tissue and you throw in BPC-157. Of course, it's a tissue. It wants to, you know, survive. It will provoke angiogenesis to get more oxygen to the tissue and all that. It's, how could you say, it's a tissue that's about to die.
Yeah.
And it knows it. There is no more nervous influx. A lot of stuff is missing. So the tissue wants to survive. It does everything it can to survive. And part of it is angiogenesis. I haven't seen any study that shows angiogenesis where it is not needed.
Okay. Okay.
And that's the most important thing. That's people have a hard time to not to grasp the concept, but it's a bit like the cholesterol thing. You know me, I was raised in the 70s where I know in my head that cholesterol is not the monster.
Yeah. Or it's not that simple anyway. Yeah.
But, you know, you have that unconscious thing where every time I eat something fat, I have that little thing, you know, cholesterol. Or if I go see the doctor and my cholesterol is too high, oh, you know, and should I do something to bring it down? When really, no, it's we know it's not like that. Well, a lot of people know.
Yeah.
Well, so it's the same thing about that. So you read about BPC creates can provoke angiogenesis, but only if and where it's needed.
Right. Right. Well, and usually the wording is it improves angiogenesis, so it's putting it in a positive light. So it's okay. So angiogenesis, we've got that.
Oh, by the way, in cancer cases, I've seen it used in high dosages. It helped a lot.
It did. Okay. Now, these are single case. I mean, we don't have for people who need to see the studies, we don't have those studies yet. But I know that, you know, there's practitioners out there that will.
Well, they're documenting what they're doing, what they're using, and a big database is being made.
Amazing.
On various disease dosages, what was taken, how it was used, how long, and this and that, and very serious conditions, and we see improvements or remission in many conditions. And again, BPC is always part of the mix.
Yeah.
If it was bad, then we wouldn't get the results we're getting.
Well, and actually going back to the GI tract, some of the conditions that BPC-157 has helped with, and I've heard this from a number of practitioners, is even things like Crohn's and colitis get in, you know, if people have the ability to use it the way that it needs to be used in those situations, mm-hmm. which is fairly high dose for a period of time, it can actually chase those bad conditions right back into remission in some cases.
I've seen full remission of Crohn's disease in less than 3 months.
That's amazing.
And serious cases where they were supposed to have like big segments of the intestine removed. And actually one case, it was the wife of a gastroenterologist.
Wow.
And he was against all that, and she had to do her treatments with BPC like kind of in secret. And even after he saw that, wow, she's amazingly better and much better than anything equal. And that was his wife. We want to believe he really did his best. He couldn't do nothing. Yeah. Even in the face of evidence, he did no.
Really? Wow. That's upsetting. Okay. Well, anyway, for other people who are maybe a bit more open-minded, it has that capacity. And so now moving on from the GI tract.
Just to close, because we talked about angiogenesis, if you want another example.
Yeah.
Just to contrast, BPC-157 repairs ligaments, right?
Yeah.
If you take it and you don't have any injured ligament, it won't make your ligament thicker or stronger or better. It's just going to leave them alone, right?
Right.
And that's what we see.
Right.
But it has the same weight as the capacity for angiogenesis. It has the capacity to repair ligaments. Mm-hmm. But it won't force that action on sane ligaments and make it maybe thicker or
What it is, I think what it is, and it actually does this also for blood pressure in the same way, it's a modulator. It normalizes. When you read the literature on BPC-157 and blood pressure, it may normalize blood pressure. So it's not, to your point, it's not lowering blood pressure. It's somehow holding it within that range that is physiologically appropriate.
As for blood pressure,
yeah.
Because probably the blood high blood pressure is a symptom. That's not
absolutely, yeah.
A disease. I'm not sick of high blood pressure. No, I have this problem that causes high blood pressure. So probably the BPC somewhere repairs what causes the high blood pressure. In terms of maybe it's due to hardened arteries. So,
well, yeah, because I was going to say, doesn't it increase the expression of VEGFR2? Which is
plus it increase nitric oxide.
And nitric oxide. So both of those are going to help with the blood vessels. So yeah, so we see BPC-1 shining also for the cardiovascular system. And then on the other front, and then in the brain, right? Yes. It influences serotonergic, dopaminergic, opioid, and GABAergic systems. Mm-hmm. So now, having said that, I should say that there's, and I see this in the group fairly, not regularly, but every once in a while you come across someone that uses BPC-157 and for them, it does not work for their brain.
Yeah, that's because it's easy. There's something wrong with their brain. That's why.
Well, so there's.
I'm not saying that in a bad way, but probably there is something.
There's an imbalance.
Some imbalance.
Yeah.
And the question is, and what people do if they don't like the effect, they may very well stop taking it. But I personally don't know of anybody, but it would be interesting to see, to continue to use the peptide to see if it would fix that imbalance.
Yeah. It's tough because, I think there's enough of these guys. And even though I haven't come across many, but I've come across a few. And they've actually formed a group.
Okay.
A support group. So there's enough of them out there that peptides, like anything else, but particularly peptides, is it's a good idea to, because I often see people, they'll get their BPC, their TB4, their CJC epimerillin. They want to start everything at once. And I think it's like supplements. You never want to do that. You want to start one, start low. Allow yourself to build up a little bit, gauge your body's response, and then you add the next one. You want to go at it, even though.
So whichever effect you get, you'll know where it comes from.
Exactly. Or if you're using BPC and you add TB4 and now you get symptoms, now you stop, you introduce TB4 on its own, then you combine them.
There you go.
You have to be very methodical. I think it's part of the reason why so many of the biohackers are engineers, because they're systematic. Yeah. And so they're the best biohackers are engineers, because they go at things very one step at a time. They can take it apart if they need to.
They take notes and, you know.
Yeah, they keep the notes.
They make little tables and everything. Exactly. No, that's great. And that's why, too, and that we talked before, too. You know, I'm not saying don't do it by yourself.
Yeah.
But that's why many people, they take a peptide for a few days. Either it doesn't work right away, or they get that little thing happening and they say, no, that doesn't work, or it's no good, or it's full of side effects. And,
yeah,
you know, no, you have to give time to time, you know, for things to happen. I'm not saying it's the case. Sometimes, yeah, it's real. You know, there are a few people, because of their biochemistry, it doesn't sit well to them. And that's tough luck. It's not for them. Look for something else, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you said that about, you know, those engineer biohackers, because that's how it should be approached.
Yeah.
With some method and with some analysis of what you're doing. So you get a much better understanding of the compound and of yourself.
Yeah. And of course, working with a coach or a guide or a doctor, like a practitioner who has some experience on the other side, that can slow you down and guide you a little bit, I think it's also, I mean, you've got people who can do it for themselves, but I think most people, even a little bit of guidance goes a long way, because even understanding what your history is, what your underlying conditions are, can give a lot of information. Okay. But we're talking about BPC here, not that. Now, in the brain also, I mean, I get so excited about BPC. It's ridiculous. Like, so regenerating nerves, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily, it's not the main action of BPC-157, and yet it has this ability to help nerves to regenerate. And specifically, well, I mean, nerves, where are they? They're your brain. Your brain's the biggest mass of nerves that you have in your system, right?
Most people
decreases neuroinflammation. So for people who've got, you know, anybody who's had I would think if somebody has a TBI, it would be a great peptide to use as part of a protocol.
Any form of neurodegenerative disease, you include BPC-157.
Okay. And now there's another thing that I've read, something about it improves alcohol intoxication. So not that we want to encourage people to go out on a bender because they have their BPC, but would you say that if it helps with neuroinflammation acutely, it should in theory help with a hangover, would it? Do you think?
Some parts of it, yeah.
In some ways?
Yeah, because actually the hangover, the biggest factor is dehydration.
Yes,
but you know, even if you rehydrate well, you're still left in a not so good state.
Yeah.
And there has been reports of people taking a shot of BPC in the morning after and getting out of the hangover like very fast.
Interesting. See, I don't have hangovers anymore. Maybe one of these days I'll have to go on a bender just to test it out.
I'm taking note of your suggestion.
Of my suggestion. Okay, great. Now, you had once told me that it may also help with the kidneys.
Yeah, I was drunk at the time.
No, you were not.
No, it does. Listen, everything. And yes, I've seen cases of people that had the kidneys malfunction, kidney diseases. It improves it. Well, it makes, again, I know we talk TB4 and BPC together.
The two of them together.
Yeah. It repairs as it does for the liver, and actually for any
of the organs.
It's documented for the heart, for the lung, for the liver. It just basically we just need one group of researcher do it with the kidneys. Oh, there is one study that was done on kidneys actually, and yeah, they showed that it's good.
It was supportive for the kidneys.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we know that pretty much head to toe, BPC-157 is going to bring some benefit to many, many conditions. So now let's talk about one of the topics that's been very hot in the groups. That's about the stability of BPC-157. I mean, people are always very concerned about stability. I think you published some very interesting data about stability of peptides in general, in terms of once they're reconstituted, how long they'll last in the fridge, that kind of stuff. But
well, what we did is pick the two that were believed to be the most unstable.
Right, thymosin alpha 1 and
MOTC.
Yeah.
And we showed that those two up to, actually with, I published, you know, in the group, after 3 weeks, but we have the data up to 4 weeks, and it keeps, you know, I was just eager to come up with the information.
Right, right.
It's those two were believed to be amazingly unstable, showed to be very stable. So, and we didn't test the ones that we know are stable, but I can assure you, if they're more stable than those were believed. So if time is in alpha one lost maybe 1% of potency. TB4 maybe 0.5%.
Yeah.
Like they're amazingly stable. Versus again, there are peptides that are used in cancer research at UCAM. I'm not there anymore, but you know, I get reports and where it's so unstable. Actually, when they inject it to the mice, they have to have the mice next to the filtering, you know, the last, and to inject it right away. Because if the mice is at the other side of the room, by the time they bring the syringe to the mice, the peptide degraded already.
Really?
Like they have to be very amazing, like right away. So of course there's research that will never reach the markets, but it opens the door to new lines of investigation. Those peptides that most of the peptides we're talking about in this group in general that are used, they all very stable. And again, if they lose something, they lose a bit of their percentage of purity, but that's just free amino acids or little smaller peptides broken down. You know, it's nothing to worry about. And again, what I said many times before, it's not milk. You know, it doesn't turn bad.
Right.
And that's not the same thing as if you get a peptide from God knows where.
Yeah.
And you get it with, let's say, 1% impurity. I'll post pictures because a couple of years ago, I bought, just for analysis, we bought thymosin beta 4, GHK, and maybe one or two other peptides, just to see what was coming out from China. And the HPLC, actually, it was better than ours.
Wow.
I mean, it was, you know, 99.1. But what spooked us, and that's why I'll put up the pictures, is that our is crystal white. The Chinese one was kind of yellowish. So that yellowish, you know, not like a deep brown, but you know, when you look one next to the other, you say, oh, that's not due to the peptide, that's due to that 1% impurity. And then if it gives colors to 99% of the rest of the mass, that means, I don't know what it is, but that's not broken down peptide. It's something that's not supposed to be there.
Right.
And I've been meaning I just need to take them out of the freezer, you know, and I'll show you. It's pretty surprising.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. So now let's move on to the stability, though, of BPC-157.
By itself.
And what we're talking about here, we're not talking about the stability of BPC-157 once it's reconstituted in the vial, which we just said is, it would be reasonably stable. It would last easily for a month. I think it would probably last
in the fridge.
Keep it in the dark in the fridge. It'll last. But what we're talking about here is how fast does it break down when we ingest it? And so this is
orally.
Exactly. So this is not for the sub-Q injection. Sub-Q, it's a non-event. And I think even, what about intranasal? Like, is that's also good because it's crossing the mucosal barrier. It's not going through digestion, so it's going to get there.
Yeah, some is absorbed because, you know, there is a lot of, the same way cocaine is absorbed. You know, there is a lot of blood capillaries and it just goes. It doesn't go to the brain. You know, when you take cocaine through the nose, it doesn't go to your brain. It goes in your bloodstream.
Exactly.
And then it goes around to go to your brain. Okay. So it's the same thing with that because of the capillaries and that it crosses easier. Most peptides do, even like C-Max, C-Lang, I think that you have 80% absorption nasally.
Yeah.
It depends if the peptide is hydrophobe or hydrophile, you know, if so the more hydrophile it is, the easier it's gonna cross.
It does the size of the peptide matter, like how many Daltons? Because I remember you telling me if something's over 400 Daltons, it's not going to really cross the skin barrier, like it won't be absorbed.
No, I think that was Carl Anore who mentioned something about that, and that was with the MSO.
Okay.
But the number I have, the MSO actually works with compounds up to 1,000 Dalton.
I see. Okay.
I think like testosterone and anabolic steroids, they're around 800 Daltons. Right. And you mix it with the MSO and it does cross the skin. That's what he was referring to.
I see. Okay, so back to our BPC. So if we're going to take it orally, you have a couple of options. One is sublingual. Again, you're going to
for the same reason, you know,
right into the bloodstream. Exactly. But if we're doing gut healing, there is value. I mean, sub-Q will always work, but there's some value in ingesting it orally so that it physically comes in contact with the tissues.
Yes, as I mentioned, for a burn, for example, you
exactly.
know, yeah, you could inject, but if it's an open wound, it's going to work only there.
On contact, yeah.
Exactly.
So now there's all
okay.
the questions.
Because, yeah, there has been, and I understand, you know, to shoot yourself all the time, it's bothering. No, 1 week, 2 weeks, but eventually it's like, oh, no, not again.
You feel like a pinprick.
Yeah. So, and people are used to take pills, you know, so let's take why can't we take a pill? Well, it turns out that BPC-157 has been shown to be, per se, you know, the acetate version, not even the stable Diagen version, is absorbable. Well, it is produced. Well, it's the BPC protein that is produced by the lining of the stomach.
Yeah.
Broken down into one of the fraction is BPC-157, which eventually, yes, can be further broken down. But while it's before it's broken down, it has a local an activity, and it does reach the bloodstream to have a more systemic effect. But lots of it is broken down. So it does work. Whichever form you take, it is inside the digestive system. So you cannot protect it all the ways. Some will be broken down, but you try to salvage as much as you can. So, and of course, the enemy of peptides in the stomach, it's actually not the acidity of the stomach. It's the fact that it's pepsin, the enzyme that digests peptides and proteins. But what happened, we don't have, the stomach doesn't produce pepsin. It produces a proenzyme that's called pepsinogen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the presence of acid, like in the stomach, it becomes pepsin. So what happened is that is basically what you want is the end result, basically, you know, just an explanation so people understand what's happening at the end. It doesn't matter. What you want is to protect the peptide in the stomach against the acidity
right.
indirectly. So the pepsin is not produced.
Yeah.
So the peptide is not digested or less digested.
Yeah.
So now, from the same people who discovered BPC-157, they came up with a stable version. Diagen, the company, they call it, it's an arginine. They add, they make a salt. It's an arginine salt of BPC, and they did stability test. But see, in those stability tests, if you go back to the patent, because it is patented, you see that in the lab, in the liquid, they throw in, well, it's water with hydrochloric acid to bring the pH down, and they add pepsin.
Okay.
So the peptide doesn't degrade because of the acidity, it degrades because of the pepsin. So if you can find a way to eliminate as much as you can the pepsin, then you're cool. The peptide won't degrade so much.
Yeah.
And then you're going to ask me, yeah, how can I do that? Well, it has been done for the longest time. You take an antacid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tums, whatever.
Yeah. Or or we were talking about the other day.
Yeah, actually, that was your idea.
Yeah.
I was inclined on Tums.
No, but you didn't let me say it. You have to take a little bit. You take a little bit of baking soda.
There you go.
Put it in water and you can squirt your BPC in there, or you can take your BPC and wash it down with the baking soda and water.
There you go. So you will raise the pH of your stomach content. The conversion to pepsin won't happen, and
it'll BPC stick around longer. Yeah.
Acetate will be protected by the less acid environment.
I want to say that it's important, if you're doing this, though, do it on an empty stomach. Like, don't have a bunch of food in your stomach.
Yeah, because you don't want it to sit there for a long time.
Exactly. Like, you don't want the food to just sit undigested. So,
yeah.
So if you're using BPC-157 for gastric healing, or whether it's the stomach or the small intestine, even the esophagus, or you know, if you wanted to get further down, you want to do this on an empty stomach, because number one, it's going to increase the transit time will be shorter, so it'll get to where it's going. Mm-hmm. And if you do it with the antacid, whether it's the Tums, as Jean-François is saying, or with baking soda, then it's almost like you're protecting it on its journey down, kind of thing.
And it works. If or somehow you got the stable version.
Yeah.
You know, the
arginine salt.
You can still do that because it is more stable, but it's not 100%. So you will increase even further the stability of that form. So it costs nothing. Plus, you know, baking soda by itself. Now, lately I've seen, you know, once in a while it pops out, has been used for decades too by athletes, you know, that to buffer lactic acid. It for this, for that. It's not a bad thing, you know. So and the thing is, if you take it on empty stomach, it's gonna clear the stomach. It's not like a Tums or some of those compounds where it's gonna coat the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not a good idea to block acidity for too long.
No, and that's why you want to do it on an empty stomach.
So you want something that, it blocks it while you need it, but after that, it's gone.
It's gone.
So that's it. A quarter of a teaspoon in a glass of baking soda in a glass of water. Throw your BPC in that. Drink that on an empty stomach, and bang, you just increase the effect of the peptide. We will do some stability test on that too.
Amazing.
Right. So we will. It's a bit different because, you know, we cannot throw in pepsin in it.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll do tests just with acid.
Yeah.
To see what's the degradation only with acid in a, like 1.5 of pH, and the same. We'll use the same solution, then throw in a quarter teaspoon of baking soda. that, then see how much it raised. It's enough, if it's enough to raise significantly the pH, and how it does affect the stability of the BPC.
Perfect.
So it's one of those. Probably we'll do that over Christmas.
Yeah, a little Christmas cheer.
But again, no promise. Like those stability tests, I've been promising them for a year. So, you know.
You're too busy making peptides.
It will come up. Well, it is time consuming. And,
of course.
And people, they kind of take it for granted, but... You know, if they were to get those tests done in an independent lab, it would be quite expensive. Yeah. So, and there is a reason, you know, because it's time consuming and manpower. And so, but anyway, we will do it. Because
yeah.
For my own curiosity, you know, I like to know what's happening.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. So net, we've done our deep dive into BPC-157. It's the be all end all. It's not the be all end all, but definitely it is a very wide acting peptide. If you've got the acetate form of BPC-157, which is the more commonly found BPC-157, have no fear. You can use it orally. And frankly, there are oral capsules of BPC-157 that I've used with clients who didn't, you know, who weren't comfortable with needles, and they've worked great.
Yeah.
You know, like from GI stuff to reducing pain in arthritic joints, like the whole nine yards. I've seen it do amazing things. There's definitely if you get your hands on the arginine form, it may be a bit more stable for longer, but you can hack it with the acetate form just by making sure you're on an empty stomach and mitigating the acidity in the stomach, reducing the acidity of the environment in the stomach so that the peptide just has more time to do its job.
And actually, what we have no clue about, and it's sometimes something I wonder, you know, when I'm in my bed and I cannot sleep, I think about that. We're not 100% sure. Okay, like time is in alpha, beta 4. You know, there are fractions that do different thing.
Yeah.
And why do they know about those fractions? Because they found them in the body. You know, yes, you have time is enough, but eventually it's broken down in those fraction, and it continues to separately to have those activities.
Yes.
Except that it's a bit of a strike of luck that it's broke down at the right place.
Right.
You know, sometimes you don't get the exact fraction you would want. But that nobody looked into is, oh, yeah, BPC is broken down in the digestive tract, but you know, I'm just thinking, we have no clue, but maybe its fractions are still active too.
Sure.
We don't know that. And that would explain why when you take it orally, you have a systemic effect, because the full peptide, it's too big to cross the barrier, the intestine barrier.
Yeah.
But its smaller fraction can cross.
Oh, I see.
And maybe, we don't know. We know just a thought. Maybe the fractions continue to be active, because per se, it doesn't make sense. And I had that conversation at one point with Dr. Stickler, a short conversation where he was asking, okay, yeah, we know it's active orally, but why? It could be another reason. For example, with certain anabolic steroids that mm-hmm. are meant to be injected, if it's the acetate version, you know, the ester of the anabolic, and the whole structure, the way it is, because to make it orally available, you have to put a CH3 bound on the carbon 19 or 17, I think. That's why they call it 17 alkylated anabolic steroids. But it turns out that the way the acetate, it's just the right length to form a weak bond. You know, the free end of the acetate create a weak link with the C17 position. Mm-hmm. It's the right length and in the right position. And it turns out that a couple of those anabolic steroids that were acetate versions were available orally, not 100%. Mm-hmm. But yes, and even commercially, sharing in Germany, they were selling Primobalan acetate pills. It was good enough to, it was sold in pharmacies in pills.
Interesting.
So, again, we don't know, but maybe in acidic environment, the BPC folds in a way to protect itself. There is so many possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully that's not what we do, but hopefully one day some research team will look into that.
Yeah.
But it does work orally, and actually it's against common sense. But, you know, when you have a knowledge of how they are digested and processed in the intestinal tract, it shouldn't work.
Well, it does fly in the face of common sense.
But it does work.
Yeah. No, I know it does. I mean, it does fly in the face of common sense, because in a way, there shouldn't be a reason why you can use one orally and you can't use the other one.
Exactly. You know, and that's
so there's something about this peptide that it's adapted to the GI, to the environment of the stomach, because that's essentially where it exists in the first place. So it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. We don't know why, but it resists more than we would predict.
Okay.
To the digestive tract.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've covered it. I think we've...
I think the main... Not everything it does, but at least those...
A lot of them.
Where people probably had questions about, you know.
Yeah, the main points. And if anybody has any other questions or any comments, or if there's anything we missed, leave us a comment and we'll be sure to cover it in a future podcast. Or if you happen to be in the Biohacking Superhuman Performance either Facebook group, or now there's a group also on MeWe, which is another platform, which is maybe a little bit more open than Facebook. I'm in those groups every single day. Jean-François comes in every once in a while when he gets a chance, which is not too often because he's a busy guy, but we do have the gift every once in a while that he'll pop in. So,
well, what I've been doing lately too is I'm there every day, but more and more, and you'll see, I won't comment, but I'll put a like.
If
somebody, you know, has the right answer, there's no point for me to repeat it. I just put a like on this comment.
I know. So every time I get a like, I feel like I'm in school and I'm getting a tick mark next to my...
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, yeah, I've seen it. And yeah, you were right. You know, there is nothing to add. But, you know, you have been learning a lot. Other in the groups are learning too. And more and more I see, hey, my work is done.
You've done a good job. All right. Okay, Jean-François, well, listen, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for tonight. This was great. And we'll come up with another topic soon and do another one. But I think this one was good. I love, I like diving into the one peptide sometimes. And hopefully we answered some questions to people about the oral function of the different forms of BPC.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, nattnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.